Okay, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your patience. I'll make a start. My name's Kath Baldwin. I'm the head of recruitment and admissions at the school, and my colleague is Sue Plater, and Sue is the manager of the financial support office. I'd like to welcome you somewhat belatedly to LSE. I'm sure I'm just one in a long line of people who've been welcoming you all day. I hope you've had an enjoyable day, in spite of the heat and some of the rather stuffy lecture theatres that we've got here. I hope you've found the answers to your questions and you've had an enjoyable and an interesting day so far. Sue and I are going to be talking to you about money, mainly, where students can get money from and where we think students will spend the money. We'll also talk a little bit about accommodation, the accommodation available around campus, and also about the support mechanisms available for students once they're enrolled at the school. So that's all from me for the time being. I'll hand over to Sue to talk about financial support.
Hello, and yet another welcome from me. Glad to see you all here. I'm sure you'll all be interested in the subject of money, and it's one that an issue obviously that has to be sorted out by students as they start their life at university. We tend to divide students in terms of finances available and needed between those who are based in the UK and EU who pay a fee, a certain fee, and those who are international students who pay a larger fee. So for 2010, we are estimating that the fee will be £3,305 for those who are from the UK and EU. And this can either be paid up front in instalments, or it can be covered by a loan, which is repayable after graduation, and to which all students are entitled, whatever their household income, whatever their financial background. For international students, the fee is likely to be in the region of £13,680, and again, that can be paid upfront in instalments. And when I talk a bit more about financial support, there is support for international students, and that would be put towards the fees. For UK and EU students, we're talking about government assistance in the form of grants and loans. The arrangements I'm going to talk about with a bit of detail are for students who are based in England. There are comparable arrangements for students based in Scotland, Northern Ireland and Wales. And the main website for all this information is the Direct Gov website. A website that grows by the day as different government departments add things to it. But the section that is marked for education and particularly higher education is what you need for anything to do with student matters. And it is, it's got a lot of information on, but if you work your way through it steadily, it's all fairly clear. I've just mentioned that when I get into the figures part of this, that you don't need to jot everything down unless you want to, because this presentation will go on our website, and Kath will remind you again at the end where to find it on our website, so that you can have a look at it when you get home and see if you can make sense of what I've said then. If it all comes out very quickly now, as we're trying to cover quite a lot of information in one go. EU students who are living in the UK may be eligible for some of the government funding, and those living outside the UK are not, but EU students are definitely eligible for the loan for fees. So that is the one thing that is not means tested, everyone's entitled to access. Looking first at the grant, which is a non-repayable section of the government support. Now, this is based on household income, and it's looking at income of less than £25,000 a year. The maximum is just under £3,000 per year at the current rates. The sliding scale then goes up from £25,000, so it is possible to get a grant, but obviously it reduces according to what your income is. It's paid in three instalments to the student, and as I've mentioned, that's the end of it then. It's not repayable. Looking at the loans, which is the element of government support that gets a lot of coverage in the media, the student loan for fees is up to the amount of fees, £3,305 a year. That money, once it's been okayed, is paid directly to LSE, so the student doesn't have to worry about paying for fees at all. The loan for maintenance is paid to the students, and the maximum annual loan depends on whether you're living at home and studying in London or whether you're going to be living outside your home but in London. So the level there is £6,928 a year if you're living away from home, or £3,838 if you're living at home in London or on the outskirts of London. One of the things I mentioned is that at some point is that travel, you can get reduced travel costs using the Oyster card as a student, so that's a factor for your costs as well. 75% of the maximum available loan is guaranteed, and the rest is means tested, and it depends whether or not you're getting a grant. They do some giving and taking between the grant and the loan at the level of the lower income. That's where it gets really complex, and you need to actually just go through the process and see what you're entitled to. I will mention that it is worth, I think, going through the means-tested process. The form as it's geared up is that you can apply for the loans without going any further with means-testing, and you just get what is available to you on a non-means-test basis. If you go further and bother to fill in all the stuff about means-testing, then you will be also assessed for an LSE bursary, and you might flip into the grant level. It also means if your income changes, you can let the student loan company know what your new income is, and they will do an automatic reassessment. You don't want then in the middle of the year to have to start the whole form again. So it's quite. We think it's worthwhile going through the whole process. So the loans, once they're provided and the student has spent them on their fees and maintenance, what happens next? Well, they will be running up interest at inflation rate, and that will be from the date of the first loan that's taken. But they will not be repaying until they graduate, and even then they will not be repaying until they're earning £15,000 and above. So at an income of £25,000, because they pay back at 9%, that would be roughly £17.30 a week. Collection of loans is done through the PAYE system. So basically once you're working, the government knows that you've got a student loan. It just is collected automatically with your tax and NI and appears on your payslip. So it's quite straightforward from that point of view. If you're self-employed, it's collected through the tax system again. The balance is written off after 25 years. So if you reach the end of that time with either never having reached the £15,000 or having to leave work for one reason or another and not paying off the full amount, it does get written off. It doesn't stay with you forever. And also it's possible to have a repayment holiday. So you could be earning lots of money, paying back, and then decide to go off and do a year around the world or something different. You can drop out of the repayment system and come back into it when you come back. That's quite new, and it will start from those who graduate from 2012. Before this, I think you had to pay off the whole loan before you could stop the repayments, before you could go away. On top of the government support, LSE offers support. To UK students, we offer bursaries, and to those, we also offer bursaries to EU students with a slightly different system, and then we offer scholarships for everybody. And we have something called the Undergraduate Support Scheme, which is available for those paying overseas fees, and they will be automatically shown how to apply for it when they go through the process of applying to the school, having an offer to the school. So the bursary first. The maximum bursary at LSE is £2,500 a year. Universities vary in how much bursaries they offer, and this is quite generous, actually, in the scale of things. We offer bursaries from your income naught up to £60,000, but it's scaled. So basically the £2,500 is for those on the smallest income. It's linked to, it's done through the student loan company process, and it's linked to exactly the same assessment you'll have been through for maintenance and grants. So you go through the system once, and then the information for bursaries is put onto the system where we can access it and we can make bursaries. So it's very straightforward for us, and it's just one form for you. There's no limit to the number of bursaries we offer, so there's not going to be a cap if you apply late for bursaries. And it's paid direct to the student in three instalments, and the letter comes through saying what you've got and when it will be paid. It's not repayable, so similar to the grant, it's there for to support living costs while the student is at university. Now, some people are not eligible for the UK bursary, either because their income's in the wrong bracket or because they're EU students. So we do have discretionary bursaries as well, which we award. So it might be we might award a discretionary bursary on top of a normal bursary if you have exceptional financial need, somebody who's caring for someone at home or has specific additional financial needs of one sort, medical or whatever, then we have the discretion to award additional money as well. So that is a form, it's the usual scholarship form that we assess all our scholarships on, but it does give us the ability to be flexible with people where they might not fit the government guidelines, but we can see why not and that there's a good reason for support. So again, that's paid direct to the student, and again, it's not repayable. The scholarships and the undergraduate support scheme, as I mentioned, there's one form you fill in, there's one form for scholarships that you fill in that comes to us, and the deadline for that is usually early in June. So at the moment we're busy assessing the scholarships. They go to the applications get assessed and go to an academic panel who make the final decision on them, and we try and support as many students as we can who've applied. They do vary in the eligibility because they're given, a lot of them are given by alumni or companies who want to support the school, want to see students come here to LSE. So they might, for example, the alumnus might only want to support students studying economics or students studying anything to do with development. So there might be limits as to what programme you're on as to whether you can apply. Or it might be they'll only support UK students, or they'll only support overseas students, or students from a certain country. So it's quite a range, and it amounts to over £100,000 a year that we are dispersing. In addition, all overseas students, as I mentioned, will have access to the undergraduate support scheme, and that's needs-based. So we're trying to put undergraduates in the same sort of position as UK undergraduates, overseas and UK the same, that we can support people who come from different backgrounds so that everybody can come and join the mix at LSE and not be barred by lack of money. Yes, that is right. Thought for a minute I'd suggested too much money, but no, you can have that as well. The Student Support Fund. This is a fund that is in place for those who run into difficulties once they're here. Obviously, a three-year degree, circumstances might change quite dramatically for one reason or another. A family member might fall ill and parents might have to support that family member more, or the all sorts of things can happen. I mean, for overseas students, sometimes something happens at home that's unrelated to their personal family but affects their employment ability or, you know, the place they come from, natural disasters and so on. We have a whole range of reasons why student needs support. And we will do our best to support that. We have the funds and we see students all the way through the year, every year. My team, I have a team of four, and we have a drop-in every day between one and two where we will see students and give advice and help them fill in forms or whatever. And so we're in touch all the time with registered students, and we're trying to make sure that once you're here and you've started your degree, that you've got all the good circumstances to enable you to finish your degree and have the best time you can here and learn, you know, in an environment where you're not worrying about money or other aspects. And Kath will talk about other support students have as well. The Access to Learning Fund is a specific fund for UK students and is government fund that supplements the ones I've mentioned, and it's available to all UK students with an exceptional financial need. So the grounds for that are on our website, but the difference between that one and the Student Support Fund is you can arrive with the problem with the Access to Learning Fund. You can come to us straight away and we can support you. The Student Support Fund, we're looking at people who've had come into difficulty only once they're here. There are other government funds for students with children, with dependents or with a disability, and those are all available on the DirectGov website. As I said, a lot of stuff on there, but it is worth going through at a steady pace and seeing what you might need and what might help you. And then just finally from me, an estimate of what we think students will need, because obviously you need to know this when trying to make the assessment of what you're going to apply for. We estimate, based on talking to students and seeing what their situation is, and in our case, particularly our office, obviously we are seeing students' financial circumstances all the time, we estimate £1,000 a month as a benchmark figure. Now, obviously, some students live on more than that. They choose nicer accommodation. They choose to eat out more. They choose to drink at the pub more or whatever. But this is a figure that we consider that students can live on. Also, students live on less, actually, and particularly in the second and third years because they've got to know London. They might do a flat share. In fact, they're very likely to, in the second and third year, have found a group of people they can share a flat with. They take over a flat from a previous lot of LSE students. You know, they know where to shop, how to cater for themselves more cheaply, and so on. But this is what we're looking at, and that's what it's made up of, and you'll see the big item really is accommodation, because living in London is expensive. Just on the second and third years, to say that all the funds I've mentioned are renewable for second and third years. In the case of the Student Loan Company funds, you have to go on each year and reapply as a continuing student. In the case of the LSE funds, then basically we look at your progress. We just make sure that you're progressing from one year into the next and everyone's happy with that. So all that I've talked about, you should be assuming you're going to get for the whole 3 years.
Sue's touched on accommodation already. I just want to expand a little bit on where students might be living in their first year and also in their second and third years. In total, LSE has got 11 LSE halls, six of which are mainly undergraduate. In addition to LSE halls, we also have access to the University of London intercollegiate halls, of which there are seven dotted around campus. And what that means is that LSE students will share accommodation with students from other University of London colleges like UCL, King's, SOAS, and around 15 other institutions that make up the University of London. Some students actually choose to mix it up a little bit and live with non-LSE students. Accommodation may be self-catered, it may be catered. There are single and shared rooms available for students, and the shared rooms may be for two or, in some cases, for three people. What we do at LSE is we guarantee all first years undergraduate students accommodation regardless of where they're coming from in the world, even if they live within the M25 or whether they're coming from Canada or China or India. All LSE students will be guaranteed a place in their first year, provided they apply by the 31st of May. The 31st of May deadline is really the crucial issue there. If they apply after that date, we cannot guarantee them accommodation. The LSE halls of residence have lots of the familiar features that you would expect to university accommodation. They have direct computer access. They're part of the LSE computer network. They have bars. They have computer facilities. They have laundrettes. Some sample prices for 2010 are on the screen there, with the lower end being £93 and the upper end being an eye-watering £220 per week. That's for a single ensuite room at the closest hall of residence to campus, premium site. And then some costs there for twin and triple rooms. And then also some prices for University of London halls as well. Hopefully some of you have already been on to the High Holborn visit, or you may be going after this session. Definitely worth doing if you haven't already had a chance to do that. It gives you an opportunity to see an LSE residence in action. So in terms of where these halls of residence are located, the central red blobs in the middle of the screen there are it's LSE, the LSE buildings. And then there's a circle drawn outside it. Just to the northwest of LSE, we've got the High Holborn residence. And then at the bottom right of the square here is the Bankside residence. That's right next door to Tate Modern, lovely riverside environment. And we estimate that that's about 25 minute brisk walk, I would say, over the bridge to LSE. And then in the top right-hand corner is another hall of residence, Rosebery Avenue Hall. But they're dotted around campus, dotted around London. Passfield Hall and Carl Saunders Hall are also up there. So Bankside, this is one of the self-catering halls of residence. 617 students can stay there. 25-minute walk to campus. And this is a 40-week contract. So if students are staying at Bankside, we would anticipate that they'll be staying there, as well as the term times, also the Christmas and the Easter vacation. That's why it's a 40-week contract. And Rosebery, another example, this is a pay-as-you-eat hall. It's, again, 25 minutes walk to LSE. This is a 31-week contract, so we would expect students at Rosebery to clear out at Christmas and at Easter and perhaps go home or go somewhere else. In terms of application, students will apply online. Again, the deadline, 31st of May, absolutely crucial. And they can place the halls in order of preference, but unfortunately we simply cannot guarantee the first choice. As you can imagine, some halls are more popular than others, so some will be oversubscribed. However, the accommodation office does try really hard to keep all the students happy. It's certainly not in their interests to have queues of unhappy students snaking around the accommodation block demanding a change of accommodation. They do try to keep students happy as far as they possibly can in terms of the halls of residence. Some students will choose in the first year to live in the private sector. Most students in the second and third years will have to live in the private sector. Very few second and third years live in halls of residence. We really only let them do that if they have a disability or if they have a special requirement that really demands that they stay in halls of residence. The majority will live outside. And as you can imagine, there's a great range of accommodation available in London. The general rule of thumb is if you're living in central London and closer to campus, the accommodation will be more costly than if you're living in, say, Zone 3 or Zone 4. And as Sue mentioned earlier on, the Oyster card for students does give students discounted travel, so that's a huge benefit when travelling in from the outer zones. The price range obviously is quite broad as well, from £60 a week up to £175 a week, depending on the nature of the accommodation and really where it is. The accommodation office does have official LSE listings of private accommodation landlords and landladies. And also, really, it's the informal networks that really get going in the second year of life at LSE. There'll be posters all around campus and on departmental notice boards, house for rent or room in house, and then students can just contact the number on that poster. And lots of student accommodation is sorted out through informal networks, through the departments. But most students do want to live with the friends that they've met in the first year once they get into their second and third years. So that's accommodation. I just want to touch briefly on pastoral support, the welfare mechanisms that are available for students throughout the 3 years of an undergraduate degree. Within the academic department, every undergraduate is allocated an academic advisor. This is an academic member of staff who is there really like a personal tutor to meet the student on a regular basis, perhaps once a term. And if a student doesn't run into any difficulties, they may not meet them again after the first year. But they're there, they're on hand, and the academic advisor does want to keep track of academic progress with the student and also to discuss any problems that the student might be having. If the student is having non-academic related problems, then the academic advisor can refer the student to the correct section of campus. There's also a departmental tutor within each department to check that everything's running smoothly with the undergraduates. And then above that, we have a Dean of Undergraduate Studies who keeps a watchful eye on all undergraduates and to whom any problems may be escalated if the academic advisor and the departmental tutor can't resolve the issues. Aside from the department, there's a health centre, which some of you may have come across if you've been touring around campus already. There's a number of doctors there within the doctor's surgery. We have a dentist there also, and counselling. We have professional counsellors there. Also, there are affiliated health and wellbeing professionals. So, for example, we have a chiropractor coming in, there are massage sessions, things like that. So it's not just literally the doctors, there's other affiliated services too. We have a student service centre which really acts as a referral point. Sue's team, the financial support office, is based in the student service centre, as are the exams team, the assessments team, the registry. So if a student doesn't know where else to go, they can always go to the SSC and then get referred on. And finally, the Students' Union isn't just there for the bars and the comedy clubs and the shop. They also have an elected education and welfare officer who deals with individual student cases. And also we have confidential advice and guidance and counselling services. Again, these are professional counsellors and professionals who work within the SU. They're not simply students counselling other students. They're professionals who come in and may give advice on immigration for international students or legal advice. A whole range of different counselling is offered by the SU. So finally, some useful web addresses. The Student Service Centre is there at the top. The Financial Support Office is the third one down. So if near the time you want to check out what scholarships are available for undergraduate students for 2010 entry, that's the place to go, because as Sue mentioned, scholarships may change year on year depending on which alumni have decided to generously donate for that particular year. And then the Direct Gov website is the second from the bottom. That really is the source of all information to do with grants, tuition fee loans, and maintenance loans. And it's also the portal into the other world of application for all of those financial support grants and loans. So that's definitely something to check out. So that's currently all we have to say in terms of presentation. Happy to take any questions. General questions, we'll just ask you to put your hands up and we'll take those. If you have a very specific question relating to your circumstances or your child's circumstances, which is going to be quite lengthy, we'll also be here at the end to speak to people individually. Okay, so any questions from anybody?
No, they've just changed the system so that they go for the income up to the tax year just finished before the student is starting. So in the case of those who are coming in October 2010, it'll be your tax return up to April 2010. So in effect, it's the previous year. But it's the You can provide a change of circumstance information. I mean, there's two possibilities. If you're if you're going for that April and then your income drops suddenly immediately after that April, but before the student starts, then you can provide the additional information in the initial process. If something happens after the student started, you can still go in and provide a change of circumstance and they can be reassessed. Yeah, then they would, I guess, look back to the point at which the circumstance had changed. I mean, you would need to get the information in fairly quickly. But there is that flexibility, and the student loan company appreciate that a lot of people will be in uncertain situations that might change in the course of a year at the moment because of, some firms making people, putting them on a four-day week, changing that quite drastically, or redundancies, or any number of things that are happening at the moment. They're trying to respond to those, and there is a process for doing that.
There was a question, I think, over here. Yeah. Overseas students, yes, they do. Yes.
For the
Oyster card.
It's yes, they
students,
do. Yes, yes, it's
provided
all students.
Provided they're a full-time student, which they would be at LSE, yes. It's discounted by a third, I believe.
Yes, so the Oyster card is already a discount on if you just buy a fare, but the student one is even cheaper, basically.
It just basically gives you discounted travel on the tube system in London, and the buses. Yes.
Is that specific to London?
That is specific to London. There is, if you, my team is in the quad, in the area where there are stalls below the student, by the student union section. And they've got a chart, actually, that would tell you out of London as well. But there's three rates. There's out of London, in London, and home, wherever you are.
Question at the back.
Yeah. Well, the yes, I haven't. I'll tell you why, because it is really fiddly and complicated. Basically, the top level of income for anything is 50,000 with the student loan company, 60,000 with our bursaries, and the kind of the minimum is. The 25,000 is the level at which, below which, you get the maximum of help. But it's really, basically, when we were working out our bursaries, which we tried to tie in with this, we handed it over to the finance department, and they produced a chart that is difficult to understand, but we just follow it. And they tell us that they're taking into account all those sort of things. There are just an awful lot of small brackets. So until you get into the system, you can't really tell what it is.
Yes.
No, I mean, some universities are using the bursary system to support specific programmes or specific areas of the country, but ours is the same for all UK students, no matter where they're from. And then basically the loan and grant system makes the allowance for the fact you're in London. The loan system really makes the allowance for the fact you're in London, studying in London. Yeah, that's repayable. So, I mean, none of our scholarships have ever just been for a student from London. So in the sense, we might have an alumni who pops up and says, well, it's much harder for people, you know, already in London, and then we would have that. But at the moment, we've not had anything quite as definite as that.
I think it's worth just elaborating on a point that's been raised. Every university, if you're going to a series of open days, at this time of year, every university has a different level of bursary, and as I think Sue mentioned, ours is one of the more generous. But even if you go to UCL or King's up the road or SOAS, everybody's bursary level and also their mechanism for actually dispersing the bursary will be slightly different. So whereas the loans and the grants are pretty much, the information will be pretty much the same wherever you go, it's the bursary information that will be very different, and also how to apply for the bursary will be different. So it's worth listening out for that on your open day travels. Question there. No, the admissions procedure for LSE is completely separate to the financial support application procedure. And indeed, because the bursary is calculated, the bursary information is derived from the student loan company, you won't even be sending an application form into the financial support office to get the bursary. So we wouldn't see that. The admission to the school is entirely separate to any financial support application.
And they're kept separate so that if a student comes to us for support in the course of their degree, then none of that is kind of relevant to their academic progress. Well, no, because at LSE, to get in, you have to have certain results. Then once you're in, once you've passed that test and got in, we assume you're bright enough to qualify for anything. So there's no additional qualification like that.
Any more questions? No? Okay. Well, Sue and I will be hanging around for another 10 minutes if anyone has a pressing, difficult question. Thank you very much for coming. Enjoy the rest of your day, and good luck with all your students' applications.